And now it's time for On Our Minds. This week, it's always news when there's a new Richard Powers novel out. If you aren't familiar with him, Powers writes big novels. Not just long, but cerebral, packed full of big ideas and scientific themes, like artificial intelligence, game theory, musicology, and genetic recombination. He's won both a National Book Award and a MacArthur Genius Award. Steve Paulson sat down to talk with him about his brand new novel, Orfeo.
Richard, how would you describe your main character, Peter Ells?
Well, he's a boy who has a gift with pattern. He is enchanted by chemistry, by physics, by mathematics, but he's also gifted at music. He's a clarinetist of some skill. The common denominator that unites all those interests is this ability to find pattern, surprise inside the predictable. And it's this response to architecture, in a way, the architecture of science, the architecture of music, that drives him, that gives him his primary passion. He doesn't understand people quite as well as he does shapes and forms. And it's perhaps that sets him down the road, ultimately, to search for a music beyond the ability of the ear to hear yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, we should talk about how we meet Peter Ells at the beginning of the book. By this point, he's 70 years old, a retired music professor, a one-time avant-garde classical music composer. And he kind of has this audacious project that he's trying to what, encode music and insert it into living organisms?
Yes, after a lifetime throwing his fate in with the avant-garde in pursuit of ever more exotic music, stranger sounds, less predictable patterns, searching for music in surprising places, he actually follows music down into the repeating patterns of nucleotides in the cell and comes up with this idea, a kind of last hurrah, if you will, having spent the life writing the kind of music where there are more people up on stage than there are in the audience, figures that perhaps there might be a poetic final gesture in which he could create a kind of music, encode it into base four, send away to a mail order house and have it converted into a nucleotide string, and find a way of placing this musical cassette for safekeeping into a replicating bacterium where it would be everywhere and surround people, but that no one would be able to hear it.
So Peter Ells decides to do something kind of crazy. He sets up a science lab in his house. I mean, basically sends away through the mail for these various kits, so as test tubes around his house, trying to create this music that he's going to insert into bacteria. And then the local police find out about it, and Homeland Security gets interested, and they think, oh, you know, maybe we have a bioterrorist on our hands.
That's right. There's something more than a little suspicious about a 70-year-old retired avant-garde composer with the home biology lab. The story was inspired by the 2004 event involving the Buffalo bioartist Steve Kurtz. Kurtz was a performing artist who often used biological materials, and after the death of his wife, was found to have a house full of suspicious biological material. And even though he could immediately prove that the material was for a museum exhibition just a few weeks away, the police did hold him. He was briefly imprisoned and wasn't entirely freed and dropped of all charges for another 4 years. And it was this sense of art colliding with the security state that really inspired me, although it took some years for me to realize how to put this into a fictional form that could become not just a meditation on the culture of fear, but also on the fear of culture, this sort of lifelong struggle of one artist to create an art that was both inviting and subversive, troubling, but tapped into this long tradition of countercultural art.
Now, it would seem that this whole idea that this kind of avant-garde artist would be a terrorist is absurd. Peter Ells just looks like an eccentric old music professor playing with his science toys in his house. But is this something we should consider? I mean, that Peter Ells perhaps really is a bioterrorist?
I suppose we see what we want to see. And in a culture as jittery as ours, the evidence is there for the asking. The do-it-yourself biology movement is fairly widespread. I mean, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people tinkering with genetic manipulation in amateur labs across the country. Practitioners of do-it-yourself biology have frequently come into contact with law enforcement and security. So this question of how absurd is it to feel that an artist might actually be threatening the safety of a country, it's the kind of stuff that appeals innately to my novelistic impulse, but it's also the kind of stuff that has all too frequently been a matter of news.
Hmm. It seems like you're also asking the question, especially because you're invoking so much avant-garde art, can art itself ever really be shocking anymore? I mean, can art terrify?
That's the question of the 20th century. Really, the book takes that question as a meditation on this counterstream in music that so profoundly displaced concert music throughout those 100 years. And from the beginning of the century, where a work like Stravinsky's Rite of Spring could produce violent riots in the streets of Paris, to the early 21st century, where all of us are so inundated by 10 million recorded tracks of music and can hear everything ever recorded from anywhere at any time and can't really listen through long enough to be particularly shocked or subverted. It's this attempt to renew music's ability to surprise, even in a time where we've seen everything, that I think really underwrites Els's pursuit.
I have to ask you about something that the German composer Stockhausen said, which got him into a lot of trouble a few days after 9/11, commenting on the terrorist acts of that day. He said, in his words, this was the greatest work of art imaginable for the whole cosmos. I mean, essentially, he was saying this was a performance piece that not only killed thousands of people, it changed the way the world thinks. And of course, this is a totally outrageous thing to say, but I have to ask you, do you agree with Stockhausen?
Well, it was an outrageous thing to say, and I do allude to that notorious statement at the end of the book. Stockhausen spent a long time afterwards trying to qualify and contextualize his statement. The question of whether a terrorist attack can be art is a profound one, and it's not an easily answered one. And there are many artists who have wanted to create a kind of terror as part of their expression. Obviously, a line is crossed when lives are taken, when property is destroyed. But I think what Stockhausen was getting at is this notion that the human impulse to create an effect in another person, to send a message that can transform history, is shared by terrorists and artists alike.
Now, we've been talking a lot about music, and the other thing that you do so much in a lot of your novels is you write about science. It might be neuroscience or artificial intelligence, or in this case, genetic engineering. Why do you keep coming back to science in your fiction?
Well, for many reasons. It's where we live. If you want to tell the story of who we are and where we've been set down and what life is like, it's not enough to pretend that we're just these social machines who are concerned basically with making friends and finding love. The way that we do that has been changed completely by the changes in time and space that we've worked through these scientific and technological transformations of the world. The luxury of creating a self and the way in which that self can be made is very much the story of these incredible prosthetic devices and these deep changes in our sense of the human that have been brought about by scientific and technological discoveries.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the creation of the self is the subject of so much great literature. It sounds like you're saying that to really talk about that intelligently now, you have to deal with the science because it tells us so much about how a self is made or perceived.
That's right. The creation of the self is still the subject of my books and still the subject of most fiction. But I think if you historicize this question, what is the relationship between the self and technology, you see that the great works of all periods are inflected by the technologies of their day. The trouble that Madame Bovary gets herself into can only come about in a world with the railroad, for instance, you know, and you know, that great bugaboo that Flaubert loved to hate. And you can look at Proust and his exploration of this world at the turn between the 19th and 20th century and see that his fascination with the telephone and the airplane are really the bellwethers of an understanding that these devices are changing the way that we understand the capacity of individual human beings.
You know, I have to ask you, I mean, a lot of people talk these days about how the modern world has become disenchanted in this age of science and rationality, and there's sort of this hunger for re-enchanting the world. Is that important to you?
What's important to me is finding a way to marshal and preserve enough attention, enough focus, to realize that there is far more magic in the world now than there ever was.
Richard Powers is the award-winning author of 11 novels. Steve Paulson talked with him about his newest, Orfeo. Richard Powers doesn't just write beautifully, he reads gorgeously. There's a section of Orfeo that's inspired by a piece of music by Mahler, and we wanted to hear that passage set to the Mahler. The result is pretty wonderful, and you can hear it too. It's on our website at ttbook.org.